This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. Got a terrific show lined up for you. And before we start, just want to thank everybody for rating and reviewing the podcast. It helps a lot with making sure this podcast gets out every single week. So if you have time, just takes a matter of seconds. Go over to Apple Podcasts or iTunes, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Post a comment, leave a rating. It's quick, it's free, it's easy. And again, it's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. Joining me this week, a true friend of the podcast, Dan Rafael, senior boxing writer over at ESPN. What's up, Dan?
Hey, Chris. Good to be on with you again, as always.
Good to have you. Good to have you, man. And I mean, a lot I want to get into. I guess we're about a week and a half or 10 days or so, whatever it is, 9 days away from Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, the rematch, heavyweight championship. And yeah, that still remains the biggest story in boxing right now. I spent a day in Alabama with Wilder for something I'm going to write next week. You've been talking to him and to people around him for the better part of the last few weeks. I mean, as we're like a week away, what are your big takeaways from what you've heard, what's been said, everything surrounding the fight right now?
I mean, it's very obvious. It's the biggest fight in boxing, and it's the biggest fight in boxing in quite a while. And it's a fight that has, you know, even people that may be a little bit down on boxing because maybe all of the top fights aren't being made, but even those folks are very excited for this fight. You know, boxing fans, I get the sense from reading, you know, comments to me, on my Twitter account or on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, people are really pumped up about the fight. If you take a look at the way the promotion is going, the folks at ESPN and at Fox are doing a tremendous job in making people aware that this fight is happening, whether it was the advertising and the things that were done on the Super Bowl or the amount of programming that both of the networks have already shown and that is still to come during fight week. It's a big deal. I mean, this is as big as it gets. I was actually talking to a friend of mine that's in the business a couple days ago, and we were sort of like, is this the biggest heavyweight fight since when? It's obviously bigger than the first fight between Wilder and Fury. I mean, I guess we really came up with probably Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson. And, you know, if you take a look at what happened in the division between that fight in, like, 2002 and now, most of the fights that were of the big nature and heavyweight division involved Vladimir Klitschko, who never had that great rival to really set the world on fire. So it wasn't that, I guess, complicated. But, you know, this harkens back to some of the big mega fights of years past, whether it was Holyfield and Lewis or Lewis and Tyson, those types of fights, or Holyfield and Tyson. This is on that level. This is a rematch of a controversial decision in a fight that was exciting, and a lot of people are looking forward to it. It's a big-time, big-time heavyweight championship fight.
Yeah, and to your point, the promotion has been unprecedented. The amount of mileage they're getting out of Fox and ESPN, whether it's the Super Bowl or everything going on at ESPN or the Fox inside PBC shows, all the things, all the shoulder programming and the advertising that's gone into this. I think this really, and I talked about this with Bob Arum last week, I think this really will tell you what the state of pay-per-view is. If this does a big number, it will reflect that, you know, all this stuff has been worth it. If it doesn't, they may have to rethink that entire model. But I'm excited for all this. And I think a lot of, and all the people that I hear from on Twitter and all that other stuff, they're really excited about it too. I don't want to get too deep into this fight because I'll probably do more about it next week. But as you look ahead, you know, 8 days away, what's the biggest question you have going into this fight?
I guess, you know, there's definitely questions. You know, the first thing, of course, is you think about what's the state of Tyson Fury's eye. He had that terrible, terrible cut that he suffered in the September fight. He said, I've spoken to Tyson about it. He said he's okay. The surgeon likes the way that that it's healed and that they haven't done necessary special precautions in his training camp. So you wonder about the eye because Wilder says, you know, he's going to go after it. So that's certainly a question. Obviously, another question is, what is Tyson Fury's mental state knowing that you know, he was essentially knocked out in the first fight in the 12th round. You know, to his credit, he survived and was able to make it to the final bell. But, you know, guys don't forget that, as Deontay Wilder has made a point of saying. You also want to talk about and wonder where Deontay Wilder is, given that he was outboxed for so many long stretches in the first fight, and then again really badly outboxed by Luis King Kong Ortiz in their rematch in November. You know, he believes that he can just land the big punch at some point in 12 rounds, and so far he's been successful. But you wonder, you know, now that Fury's had 12 rounds with him, can he make some adjustments and not get nailed by that big punch? Those are the kinds of questions. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, the adjustments that they'll make from having seen each other and having so different styles of what the second fight's going to look like. You know, those are the things I've been thinking about in terms of, like, the in-the-ring stuff that goes on. Outside the ring, I think, which one of these guys is going to pass out first from all the interviews they've been doing? It's unbelievable. That's another reason why this fight has a chance to be a huge success, because it's a two-headed monster. A lot of times you get a big fight, and it's really only one guy does the bulk of the talking and the interviews and the media and all that. In this fight, you got both guys who are willing, ready, and able, and just, you know, doing everything in their power to help market and promote this event. I mean, they're two true pros when it comes to doing that kind of promotion, and they've both done a great job.
Yeah, and to that point, I was driving through Boston earlier this week, afternoon drive time radio on the number one sports station in Boston and sports show in Boston, and I hear Tyson Fury. I hear Fury on the phone, you know, talking about that fight and really regaling those hosts with all kinds of stories about his life and his past and how he feels about this fight. That's not the kind of stuff you generally hear on Boston sports talk radio. You hear, you know, Red Sox, Patriots, a little bit of Celtics. I mean, all that stuff. And there's Tyson Fury, drive time, in the middle of it all. So you're right. The promotion from these guys has really been impressive as well. I agree with everything you said. The biggest questions all come on Fury's side of the ledger, right? I mean, it's the cut and how significantly it's going to be a factor, if at all. It's his mental state after getting knocked down like that. It's the addition of Sugar Hill to his team, and how does that shake things up in a positive or negative way? I think Wilder's going to be Wilder. I mean, it's funny. I was asking him in Alabama, like, do you even train to win decisions anymore? I mean, not to say he wants to get kind of battered around the ring, but, you know, watching the Luis Ortiz fight, and you were there too, it just seemed like everything he was doing was to set up that one big punch. He just wanted to get in a position where he could throw that big right hand. So whether he was down like 5-1 or 6-0 or whatever it was, he just didn't seem interested in, you know, kind of outpointing him. Now, he said, of course he does. He trains for every type of outcome. But I just think in this fight, you know, he might take the exact same approach. He might say, you know, let Fury rack up these rounds or be okay with it at least, as long as it gets him in position to land those big shots in the hope that Fury will stay down this time. So those are my questions coming into it.
I mean, if you are on you know, Team Wilder, you'd hope that he might be a little bit more cognizant of what the scorecards may be, because you don't want to get too far down, because at the end of the day, the last fight did go 12 rounds. He did not get the knockout. It's a rarity. It's only the second time in his career that he didn't get the knockout, the other being when he first won the belt against Bermain Stavern back in 2015, who he then knocked out in the first round in their rematch a few years later. But you can't just go and give every round away. You know, if it goes to the cards, you know, you don't want to get another draw. You want to get the win. So there's no reason why he can't come out and be a little bit more aggressive. I mean, yes, Tyson Fury is a superb boxer. He's light on his feet for such a big guy. He's got quick hands. But I think, you know, Fury does not have that kind of punching power that is going to concern Wilder that much, you know, as long as he doesn't get hit clean on the chin. You know, it behoove him to do things perhaps a little bit differently and still look to set up his right hand.
You know, Dan, to that point, I think, you know, Wilder has said that Fury didn't hurt him in the first fight. Didn't look like that to me. I mean, looked like Fury got to him a couple of times with some of those flurries. He doesn't have that one-punch power, but if he throws 3, 4, 5 combinations on the chin, he can hurt you with some of that. I mean, he's a big guy throwing those punches. So I just...
That's interesting in terms of him talking up the rematch. You know, you can choose to believe him or not. Maybe it's diversion. Maybe he's being for real. Maybe it's just complete nonsense. He said it to me in an interview a few days ago, that he's going to knock Deontay Wilder out in the second round. I find that hard to believe. But Tyson Fury's done a lot of things that people didn't believe, the way he was able to come back from all of his issues. He said a second round knockout. We'll see if he's a man of his word and goes for it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think part of that is Tyson Fury knows that his mind games have an effect on Wilder, that he can get inside that head and maybe take him out of his game. So just by saying that, maybe he gets Wilder thinking, well, I got to be careful these first two rounds, and maybe he makes a mistake, but we'll see. One final note on this fight. Eddie Hearn said recently he's rooting for Tyson Fury to win because he believes that Fury will run towards a fight with Anthony Joshua if it's available to him in the aftermath. I tend to agree with him. I think Fury is, you know, his own man and wants these big challenges no matter what, and he'll find a way to get a deal done. Eddie is less enthusiastic about a Wilder fight if Wilder winds up knocking out Tyson Fury, and I agree with that as well. I don't see that happening in 2020. And reading some of Wilder's comments, it doesn't sound like he seems all that interested in an AJ fight. And that surprises me because even though Joshua didn't have a spectacular comeback win over Andy Ruiz, he still beat him. And he still has three pieces of the heavyweight title. And it's still the biggest fight that can be made in boxing. What do you make of that, of Wilder's kind of, at least public disinterest in an AJ fight?
Well, I have a couple thoughts about that. The first one is, number one, Wilder has been down the road where there were attempts to make the fight, and he feels like it was on the other side that didn't make the fight, so he was sort of disgusted and is kind of fed up with that side and really doesn't want to think about it. And I think the other part of that is that, you know, he's focused on February 22nd. He's focused on making the fight and the rematch with Tyson Fury as big as possible, and Anthony Joshua can wait. So he's thinking, you know, let's make this fight the biggest thing we can do, and, you know, don't talk about Anthony Joshua until after I take care of Tyson Fury, which is a respectable sort of thought. So, you know, I don't think that he really doesn't care about Joshua because he's the first guy that has said over and over and over, you know, one name, one face, one champion. Well, the only way you get that in boxing right now in the heavyweight division is for the winner of Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, number two, to take on Anthony Joshua. You know, presumably if Joshua wins his mandatory defenses that he'll have coming up in the next couple of fights, most likely. So I don't really buy the disinterest. He said it, yes, maybe it's how he's feeling at the moment, but if the fight is there for him, I believe that Deontay Wilder, who has never shied away from wanting to fight top guys, you know, will still try to go after that particular fight. And, you know, hopefully for the sake of the sport and for boxing, the guy that wins next Saturday will be an opponent for Anthony Joshua in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I said to him as I was leaving his gym in Alabama, like, if you win, please make the fight against Joshua. I don't care if it's on the Food Network. I really don't. Make the fight against Joshua so we all can all see the fight that everybody in boxing really wants to see. All right. This weekend, Dan, Friday night to be exact, Ryan Garcia is back in the ring, 135-pound lightweight contender. He makes his 2020 debut against Francisco Fonseca. Not a difficult opponent for him, I wouldn't think, but it presumably sets up a fight with Jorge Linares, who is fighting as the co-main on that card. That fight could happen as early as the summertime. This is an interesting year for Ryan Garcia because, look, he's got all the tools. He's got the looks. He's got the backing behind him with Eddie Reynoso, Team Canelo. He's got certainly money behind him as well. He's got enormous popularity with the Instagram followers. Your impressions, do you think Ryan Garcia has the goods, the boxing acumen, to be a big-time star?
I do. I think he does. I think Francisco Fonseca is definitely the best opponent of his career so far. It's a great measuring stick fight, and Ryan has spoken about that because Fonseca is a guy who has faced elite guys. The only two losses in Fonseca's career was against Gervonta Davis in a junior lightweight world title fight where Davis did not make the weight, but Fonseca could still have won it, but he didn't. And his only other loss came in another fight against, you know, Davis obviously is a pretty big name, but his only other loss was a decision that was a little bit competitive against Tevin Farmer that took place a little over a year ago, you know, who was at the time considered, you know, the best or the second best guy in that weight division. So Ryan Garcia has made the point leading up to his fight on Friday that you can now take my performance against Fonseca and compare it against guys like Farmer and Tank Davis because he says that he would like to fight Gervonta Davis this year. Now, we know the issues that are there in terms of making that kind of match. But the point is, he's very confident. He's got a lot of ability. I've been a Ryan Garcia supporter for a few years. I picked him as the prospect of the year in 2017. It's now time for him to show that he can actually take that step from prospect to serious bona fide contender. I do think he has the skills. I do think he has the desire because he wants to prove people wrong. He's tired of being called a pretty face. Oh, you're just a guy with a big following on social media. You know, he made the step by leaving his training team to go with a more professional camp with Eddie Reynoso in that camp. That has rubbed off well on him, I think, being around Canelo and how hard he works and the people in that gym. So his possibility of becoming a star is certainly not going to be for the lack of effort and for the team that he has placed around him. It's up to Ryan to do it, but, you know, I think he can, and I think we're going to see a great performance from him on Friday.
Yeah, and the pretty face like criticism doesn't really stand up to scrutiny because in addition to what he's done as a pro, I mean, this guy was a 15-time amateur champion. Like, he was a national gold medal champion. He had you go down his bio, he's got a ton of accolades. He fought well against Devin Haney in the amateur ranks. They say they split their matchups against each other. So, you know, like, he's got the backing or the background to be a big-time star. I'm with you on Fonseca being a good opponent for him. I thought Romero Duno was a good opponent for him. He just made real short work of Romero Duno. I mean, Duno was a tough, rugged guy coming in straightforward, was coming to knock Ryan Garcia out, and Garcia just flattened him in that first round. I mean, his power, I think, is real. His speed is real. And I've got a chance to be up close for his last few fights. It does seem to me, Dan, like he's improving as a member of Team Canelo and with the Reynosos. It seems like he's adding stuff to his game that I think will only be on display. I just wonder, and you mentioned Tank Davis, is he ready for that at this point? Is, you know, at this stage of his career, if they can make, politics aside, if they can make Tank Davis Ryan Garcia in 2020, is that a competitive fight to you?
I mean, I don't think he's ready for that level of a fight at the moment, and honestly, you know, it's good that he talks about those fights. I just don't see that happening. Not because Ryan doesn't want the fight, but you know the political obstacles of making a match like that. Golden Boy working with Mayweather Promotions is highly unlikely. Tank fights on Showtime. You know, it's they're not going to bring Ryan Garcia to Showtime. Leonard Ellerbe and the Mayweather team are not going to look to bring Tank Davis to DAZN. They had a one-off offer for several million dollars to bring him there to do a fight against Tevin Farmer. They didn't take it. So, you know, they're off doing their own thing. Not to mention, you know, it's very unclear at this moment in time what Tank Davis's immediate future is, because he has legal issues because of a domestic violence charge that was put on him recently for that video that went viral that everybody saw. So, you know, Tank Davis got other things to worry about besides Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia's got things to worry about with Francisco Fonseca. I like the step-up fight against Linares if Linares is successful and on the undercard and Ryan wins the fight in the main event. I think people have to remember one thing also, by the way, about Ryan Garcia. He's 21 years old. He's still a baby with 19 professional fights. And I don't even think he's got 60 professional rounds as a professional thus far. So, you know, there's a lot that is expected of him, but he still needs some time to continue to develop. He's getting there. He's awfully close. I don't think it's going to be a long time, but it's, you know, he's still young in this game, and he still needs and deserves the opportunity to grow into a fighter that we think he can become.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I think a Tank Davis fight now would be competitive, largely because I still don't know what Tank Davis is either. I mean, Tank's really got one reasonably good win on his resume against Jose Pedraza. You know, he's got two titles in two different weight classes, if you want to call them that, but he hasn't proven anything either, especially at 135 pounds, where that fight would take place. Ryan is a natural 135-pound who eventually is going to grow out of it in the next couple of fights, I think, whereas Tank is just a guy that feels like he sort of ate his way out of 130 and is sitting at 135 pounds. But for Tank Davis,
Ryan Garcia,
though,
is new into the weight class also, because he had fought at 130 up until the middle of 2018. So he's only had a few fights in the 135-pound division. But again, it's because at 21 years old, he's still growing. Tank Davis at 25 is not growing, other than, you know, maybe not taking his training as seriously as his team would have hoped.
Yeah, it was interesting. Looking at Twitter the other day, I saw Andre Ward, the great fighter, future Hall of Famer, ESPN broadcaster, had a tweet out going out to managers and promoters. There's a time and place for building a fighter, tune-up/stay-busy fights. If that's all your fighter fights, you are doing them a disservice. The day they face an elite fighter, they won't be ready. Reward comes with risk. Manage the risks, but don't avoid them. Now, I don't know who he was talking about, but he very easily could have been talking about Tank Davis in that respect.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, you know, look, Davis is a great talent, and he's exciting, and, you know, he's got some element of charisma. He's obviously shown that he can draw some fans in a variety of different locations in his hometown, etc. But his resume is kind of thin. I mean, he had a good win against Pedraza, obviously. That was a good win when he first won his first world title. The win against Gamboa, you know, who's a good name, who had looked decent in his last couple of fights, including on Tank's undercard in the previous fight. But then when you really take a look at it, he went 12 rounds with a guy who spent about 10 rounds fighting with a torn Achilles. That did not make that win look that great, to be quite honest. I mean, I'm not knocking Tank. I'm a fan of watching him fight, but, you know, they might want to reassess where he is in his boxing life, not necessarily in his ability to become a star and generate eyeballs and ticket sales and all that, but, you know, he needs to be a little more consistent in the ring, it seems to me.
Oh, I agree. He's got great speed, good power. I think if he can fight at 130, that's probably best for him. But look, I mean, if he, I assume that Leo Santa Cruz is still very much on the radar for them. I don't know what I'd learned about Tank Davis, Dan, in that type of fight either. I think Leo is at the end of his career, even though chronologically he's not that old. I do think he's been in so many tough fights that he's kind of towards the end of his better years. I think Tank probably wipes him out, especially if it's at 135 pounds. I don't learn a lot from that fight. Do you?
You don't say that again? You don't know the witch for that fight?
I don't learn a lot about Tank Davis from a fight like that.
Well, I mean, I think you'd learn about, you know, at least from the point of view of how he responds in a much higher profile fight than he's ever been in before, because that would be on pay-per-view. There'd be a lot more demands on his time in terms of media and fan and sort of stuff to prepare for that fight. Leo isn't the most accomplished fighter that he would have ever have faced, you know, who knows his way around the ring, who's been in with some very solid opposition during his career. So while I think it's an opportunistic selection of an opponent, and I do think that Tank probably would be the favorite and probably would win, you know, I don't think it's like a massive walk in the park either for him. You know, Leo Santa Cruz is a proud warrior and is not unfamiliar with getting in there and throwing down if necessary. So, you know, there's some intrigue to me for that fight. Is it? Would I be more intrigued by some other matchups? Yeah, of course. But I still think that's a good, interesting fight, and I'd like to see it. I think that's a very reasonable step for Gervonta Davis, both in terms of his competition level as well as in terms of the marketability because of the fact that they would look to put that as a pay-per-view fight.
Let me ask you this. Temporarily putting the legal issues aside, and they are significant, believe me, I'm not discounting that, but let's just say that Tank Davis fights Leo Santa Cruz in May and that he wins in a convincing style. Do you think that he turns down an opportunity to fight the winner of Lomachenko versus Lopez? I know there are politics there, but that would be for the undisputed 135-pound championship, a boatload of money. Do you think he turns that down?
I don't know if it's Gervonta Davis who turns it down. I just think that his handlers aren't looking for that particular fight, not because they're afraid to put him in with this guy or that guy. I don't buy that. But they want the business done their way, not somebody else's way. And when you're dealing with particularly, I mean, for all the issues that there are between certain promoters and different entities about making fights, this and that, whether it's Top Rank and PBC or whoever you want to name, it even seems a little bit more complicated when the Mayweather side gets involved in its Top Rank. There's so much water under that bridge. And I just don't think either side wants to deal with the other one. Just like, they don't need the headache. And it's not like there's so much gargantuan money in that fight that they have to make the fight. I mean, it's a big fight, don't get me wrong, and it would probably do a lot of business. But it's not like it's going to sell, you know, 1.5 million pay-per-views. So, yeah, you know, we can leave it alone. I just don't see that fight happening. You know, would I like to see it? For sure. But, you know, look, if it doesn't happen, there's plenty. The good thing about the lightweight division right now is there's a lot of quality talent there and good matchups to make, whether they're involving of Gervonta Davis or Lomachenko or Lopez or a Devin Haney, you know, or you know, a couple of other guys that are in the weight class. So it's you know, there's fights to be made. That one I just think is going to be a bridge too far, at least in terms of the business side of what happens.
And that would be disappointing because by the time that fight would happen, Tank would be about 26 years old. If Lomachenko wins, I don't think there's a downside to stepping in the ring with Lomachenko. You have a chance to fight for undisputed. You can make some money. And if you lose, you lost to the best. It's like with Gary Russell. Like, you lose to the best. I just don't see... I don't think his career would be negatively affected, Dan, if he fought Lomachenko and lost.
Gary Russell didn't. I love his positive enthusiasm. I wish it would rub off on everybody, but I just can't get there with that one.
Yeah. I hear you. Let me ask you this about another fight that happened last week. Kell Brook, he made his return to the ring, knocked out Mark DeLuca. 14-month layoff for Kell Brook. He's only had a handful of fights at 154 pounds. I liked how he looked, Dan. I thought he looked sharp for a guy that's been off that long. He fought a guy that he clearly had a big skill level advantage over, but he got the job done. Knocked him down twice, looked like he broke his nose, and got the knockout. What did you think of how Kell Brook looked last weekend?
I agree with what you said. I thought it was an excellent performance, considering all the circumstances that you mentioned. Kell Brook showed that he's still got something left. You know, he'd been off 14 months, so did it take him about two rounds to really get back in the groove? Absolutely. He did seem to break his nose in the third round when he also scored the knockdown. Won every second of the fight, pretty much. Knocked him out with the left hook in the seventh round and did what he was supposed to do. Shake off the rust. Do it against an opponent who wasn't as skilled as he was, obviously. But Mark DeLuca is not a pushover guy. Mark DeLuca is a hardworking guy. He was in great shape. I've seen him fight a few times. You know, he's a hard-charging kind of guy. He gave it everything he had. He was game. And he did what I'm sure that the Kell Brook team hoped would happen, which is put up some resistance, fight back, but not too much because you want your guy to win. And Kell Brook was able to do that. It was, to me, the perfect kind of fight for him to get well against. In other words, he wasn't fighting a tomato can. He wasn't fighting a complete scrub. He was fighting a competent professional who just was maybe, if you view Kell Brook at this stage of his career as like a B fighter, maybe a B-plus fighter, Mark DeLuca is probably closer to like a C-plus fighter. And you put them together, and the guy with the better talent is going to win out usually. And that's exactly what Kell Brook did. He showed that he's got something left. They had Liam Smith, a former title holder at 154, sitting ringside, hoping to have that fight, a fight that Kell Brook said afterwards that he would like to have. Eddie Hearn is on board. He's involved with both guys. He'd like to make that fight. He reiterated that to me a few days ago when I talked to him on the telephone. So I think, you know, in the next, you know, few weeks or a couple of months or whatever, we're going to see a fight between Kell Brook and Liam Smith get made. And that, you know, is it the biggest fight of all time? No, but it'll probably mean the winner. It'll probably end up being some kind of elimination fight, so the winner will position himself for a shot to fight for one of the belts at 154. It's a good matchup. It's two well-known guys, two guys that are usually in good fights. You know, in Britain, it'll be a big deal fight because they're both from that country. They know each other. They've sparred together. They've been friendly, but they also know business is business. So I say count me in as somebody that is interested to see that particular fight. You know, it may not be a mega fight, but it's a nice matchup with two good quality veterans.
Yeah, and I think Dan Brook can become kind of a carrot for some of these 154-pounders to maybe travel overseas to go and fight him. I mean, he's not the biggest star in the UK anymore, but as he stays busy, like Liam Smith versus Kell Brook probably does pretty decent business in the UK in terms of crowds and revenue. I think you could see, because the 154-pound division, Jermell Charlo is right there. Jarrett Hurd has a fan base, but guys like Patrick Teixeira, Jason Rosario, J-Rock Williams, these are good fighters, but not fighters with strong fan bases. Even Charlo, I mean, you know, I was ringside for Charlo versus Tony Harrison. They didn't have many fans there at all. Certainly not big-time Charlo or Harrison fans. I mean, Kell could wind up being kind of a money man in that division if guys are willing to travel overseas to face him.
Be the division with the most superstars or the most, you know, pound-for-pound talent. In terms of competition among the best guys and fights that will be exciting for fans to watch, it might be the best division in boxing. And the reason is because there's several fighters who seem to be on about the same level. They've been trading the belts around in a lot of good matchups. There's good names, and they've made good fights. And, you know, there's any number of matches in that weight class where if you made them, you would sort of have to flip a coin as to who was going to win, whether it's Charlo, Rosario, Julian Williams, like you said, Jarrett Hurd. Kell Brook has established himself back now with the win. You got Liam Smith there. You know, Arislandi Lara is older now, still there, but now been involved in much more high-contact fights. Tony Harrison is still viable after you know, what was a competitive loss in the Charlo rematch. You mentioned Tecito, who has one of the belts. He's got a mandatory against Brian Castagno. That is a fight that, you know, I don't know who wins that fight, do you? You got Erickson Lubin, who's on the, you know, still on the rise, even though he had the loss to Charlo. He's looked pretty decent in his last few fights. Won about four fights in a row since the loss. You know, still in position to fight for one of the titles at some point in the not-too-distant future. You know, I just named about, I don't know, about 13 guys. I mean, it's a fun weight class right now. I mean, it may not be megastars, but if you're a fan, you can make throw all those names in a hat and pluck them out, and any one of those matchups would be something fun to watch.
You know, a name you didn't mention was Amir Khan, and, you know, look, I think there's always going to be some level of interest in the UK in Kell Brook versus Amir Khan, but, I mean, how long past its expiration date is that fight, Dan? Is there still
any real interest in it?
It's like a carton of milk sitting on a driveway in July for about a week. You know, I mean, look, that fight at this point, you know, would it still sell to some fan base, some part of that group that has wanted to see that fight? Obviously, it probably would. Personally, I'm done with that fight. I'm good. It never happened. It won't mean a whole lot if it does happen. It should have happened about 5 years ago when they were both still, you know, near or at the top of their game. I mean, you know, if it happens now, just call me a cynic. It's just a money grab at this point. I understand boxing is a business and guys do it for money, but that just is almost to the excess of, like, what's the point now? It has no relevance in championships and pound for pound and Hall of Fame. It's just a fight between two guys that, you know, should have fought each other, you know, half a decade ago.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, and there's also going to be a weight issue. Khan doesn't want to go up to 154. At this point, I can't see Kell wanting to go to 147 for that fight.
Yeah, I mean, they can figure that out, I guess. But, I mean, you know, at this point, you know, I'm not sure what the purpose of it is. And I say that with no knock on either guy. I've been a Kell Brook fan for a long time. I've watched him fight many times. You know, same with Amir Khan. I've covered his entire career. You know, always liked Amir, always gave him a lot of credit because he had so much heart to go fight anybody. He was really one of these guys that truly never backed down from a good challenge. But that matchup between him and between Khan and Brook, you know, it should have happened. And if you make it now, it's just, to me, it literally is strictly business.
I don't even know who I want to see Amir Khan fight. Like, I used to be, I want to see him fight a bunch of guys. Now, I mean, is there anybody out there that makes any sense for him?
Again, I'm not trying to diss Amir Khan. He's been a credit to boxing for a long time because of his willingness, like I said, to fight top guys. But I'm not sure what's the reason. He's made a lot of money. He's been a champion. He's fought a lot of top guys. He's won some. He's lost some. You know, he looked terrible against Terrence Crawford in the fight that was several months ago. I know he came back and got the one win against a Billy Dibb who was much, much smaller than him when they fought in Saudi Arabia. I mean, you know, if Amir Khan wants to have another fight, you know, so be it. But, you know, I think at this point, you know, why not call it a day? He's got a beautiful family. He's got a lot of money. You know, enjoy your life.
Yeah, not any natural opponent out there for him, and he's not considered a top guy at 147 anymore. All right, a few things I want to run through with you, Dan. Caleb Plant, he's going to defend his super middleweight belt this weekend in Nashville. It's a mandatory defense. His opponent has rarely fought outside of Germany, so I assume he's going to kind of, you know, Caleb's going to roll through this one. Do you see PBC making a unification fight with David Benavidez at some point this year? Because that's a pretty easy fight to make politically, and I think a pretty terrific fight on paper.
I don't think it happens this year. Matter of fact, when I did a story about Caleb Plant that was published on Thursday, and I didn't write about it in the piece because it was a different topic I was writing about, but it did come up in our interview. And Caleb said that is the fight that he would like eventually. He would like to do it right away, but he believes that everybody else wants to put it off a little bit to make it a little bit bigger, which I can understand that because as great of a fight it is, I think that could really be, and I'm not, you know me, Chris, I'm not huge on marinating, but there are certain fights where it does need a little TLC to get it to the point where it really can maximize it for everybody. And that's the kind of fight where it could use a little bit more seasoning to get it ready. It needs another fight or two before it really becomes something special. And it could be because they're both very, very talented and interesting fighters with personalities and contrasting styles who make pretty good fights. And, you know, they're both unbeaten. They both are guys with titles. They're both with PBC. It is a makeable fight. Caleb's opinion was he'd like it as soon as he can get it. He felt like others might put it off because they can build it into a much bigger fight. I kind of agree with that. They couldn't be built into a pretty big fight. They've both been getting very good exposure on the cards that the PBC folks have been putting each of them on. Caleb has a chance to shine in a national main event on Saturday on the PBC Fox card. You know, he's fighting Vince Feigenboots, who's not well known in this country, obviously, but if you follow boxing, he's not bad. He's only 24 years old. He's got a lot of knockouts. He's a good puncher. He's got good experience. His only loss was in a world title fight. I think he's, I'm not going to say that Caleb Plant's not going to win the fight, but I think he's a little bit of a live dog in this fight. And I'm interested to continue to follow his progression. David Benavidez has got a mandatory defense that he'll have this spring against Yildirim that was already mandated. So that'll be his next fight. And then I suspect that they'll each fight at least one more time, and maybe sometime at the, in the first part next year, next spring, like a year from now-ish, you know, maybe we'll be talking about seeing Caleb Plant fighting David Benavidez. That's a really good fight in a division that doesn't have that many great fights that can be made.
Yeah, I'm with you on letting it kind of marinate a little bit. I hate that word because it's associated with, you know, Bob Arum saying, let's let, you know, the two featherweights there, Gamboa and Lopez, marinate for a while. But that's the kind of fight that can wait at least one more year. I mean, Plant's only 27 years old. Benavidez is just 23. I mean, you can build them up against a couple more opponents. As long as it happens, you know, early next year, I'd be okay with that. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page with that one. You know, Dan, a fight that's not marinating is what's going to happen in a couple of months with Daniel Dubois versus Joe Joyce. Dubois, I know you're very high on one of your top prospects in 2019. Joe Joyce, of course, a silver medalist in the 2016 Olympics who has been fast-tracked as of late because of his advanced age. I love when fights like this happen, Dan. Even though it probably doesn't attract the kind of mainstream audience, at least in the U.S., that it should, this is a terrific matchup. You know, kind of a I don't want to call it a crossroads matchup, but the winner of this fight will take a big step forward in the heavyweight division.
What do you make?
No doubt about it. I mean, look, I don't necessarily agree with Frank Warren on a lot of things. He's the promoter for this fight and of those guys. But Frank made a very good point when he was commenting about when this fight was announced, that on February 22nd, you got the two best heavyweights in the world between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury for the heavyweight title. And then, you know, come this fight in April, you've got the two best up-and-coming heavyweights in the world, you know, getting in the ring to make a statement about who can be the next guy to take that step up to fight for the heavyweight title. I think Dubois against Joyce is a fascinating fight. I see reasons to go with either guy. I'm very interested in it. You know, it's a pay-per-view in the UK, and although the deal is not 100% done in terms of the American broadcaster, most likely, from what I am told, it will be on ESPN Plus, so it's not going to be a pay-per-view or anything like that. So, you know, that's obviously a good thing. Look, you need to give both Joe Joyce and Daniel Dubois credit because, again, I don't agree with Frank Warren on everything, but he also said this. These guys didn't need to take this fight. Both of them stepped up and wanted to take this fight. They wanted to test themselves. They wanted to challenge themselves against, you know, a quality opponent. They could definitely have gone the route where they fought a few more fights against lesser guys, waited for a mandatory, especially Joe Joyce, who's close to that position already. You know, Joyce, you know, to his credit, he wants this fight. He's got the better experience. He's fought, you know, several more sort of notable guys than Dubois has. But Dubois is young, and he's fast, and he's big, and he's strong. He can punch. I mean, it's a really interesting fight. I think either one of these guys, you know, has a chance to win given the punching power that each of them possess. And, you know, I can't wait to see this one. I know I don't want to make it out to be like it's, when we saw, you know, some, you know, Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury or Lewis against Holyfield or a fight like that. But in today's heavyweight division, this is a fascinating matchup. You don't get a lot of fights like this where you got two guys with a big future ahead of them putting this kind of risk at stake so early in their pro careers.
How high are you on Dubois? I mean, Joyce to me is a good fighter who will probably never be great. I just think he's a little too mechanical. I think he's got a ceiling, and I can see that ceiling from here. Dubois, I mean, he's got all the skills, speed, power. What he did in his last couple of fights, really impressive. I mean, how good do you think he can be?
I mean, Joe is, I think, what he is. I mean, I don't think he's going to all of a sudden have dramatic improvements. He's 34 years old. That's the reason he's fast track. He stayed amateur for a long time, you know, and then he won the silver medal and he turned pro, but he was already in an advanced age for a boxer. But he's moved along well. The thing about Joe that gives him a chance is, you know, he may not be the fastest guy in the world, and he's not, but he's big, he's super strong, and he seems, at least from my experience of watching his fights, he seems like he takes a pretty good shot. So in the heavyweight division, if you can take a shot and you can deliver a shot, you got a chance to be successful. Now, can he be outboxed by guys who are maybe more skillful? I think that's certainly a possibility. You know, I think Joe Joyce, in the right circumstance, against the right opponent, could win a title. Certainly could be around for a while to be in interesting fights and you know, give the division some depth. You know, Dubois has probably more natural ability. He's faster. I made the comparison with Dubois and wrote about this not that long ago. From the first time I saw him, he reminded me in many ways, both in terms of how he just physically looks, to the style in which he fights, to the quickness, to the power. He reminds me of Riddick Bowe. I mean, that's the way I looked at him from day one. And obviously, Riddick Bowe was a top heavyweight. Maybe not for a long, long time, but he certainly reached the heights of the division. And you know, maybe Dubois can do that also.
Yeah, I think Frank Warren would be ecstatic if he turns into Riddick Bowe. That's for sure. Let me finish with this, Dan. Matchroom came out of nowhere and signed Josh Warrington. As last couple of weeks, we've been, you know, hearing speculation about Warrington fighting Shakur Stevenson in a 126-pound unification fight. What did you make of that signing? Matchroom, not especially deep at 126 pounds. Kid Galahad, of course, is there, and you know he might be able to move up to 130 at some point. But what did you make of that, and does that end the possibility of Shakur Stevens versus Josh Warrington?
Well, I'll answer the second question first, which is no, it does not end the possibility of Shakur Stevenson and Josh Warrington. I think right off the moment that the announcement came that this signing had occurred, most people probably thought, oh, you know, that goes, because, you know, Shakur's with Top Rank and fights on ESPN. Frank Warren has a deal with Top Rank for his fights to be put on ESPN Plus. They have a close relationship. They co-promote Tyson Fury together and Carl Frampton and that sort of thing. So you figured that would mean they could easily make the fight and it would be on ESPN. There's no issue in terms of the broadcaster. And if he's with Eddie Hearn, now it's a whole different ballgame because it becomes a different broadcaster, their rival promoters, etc. In fact, it actually might even make the possibility of the fight happening even better. Now, I don't know if that's the reason why Eddie decided to sign Josh when his contract with Frank ran out. I think Eddie is the kind of promoter, like a lot of promoters, if you see an undefeated champion who can draw the way Josh Warrington does, who is a real talent, of course you want to be involved with him. And keep in mind, you mentioned Kid Galahad. Eddie is involved with him also. And Eddie, before Frank Warren promoted Josh Warrington, Eddie Hearn promoted many of his fights and is certainly very familiar with his abilities, and they know each other. So, you know, there was a desire to reunite. So as far as how that Shakur fight goes, I spoke to Eddie about that. I spoke to Top Rank about it. They're both like, we can still make the fight. In fact, just this week, right after that announcement was made, Carl Moretti from Top Rank and Eddie Hearn were exchanging text message or WhatsApp about, you know, trying to do something. Obviously, Shakur's got the Mariaga fight coming up on March 14th. But after that, in the June time frame, there's still the possibility that this can happen. Now, Shakur doesn't have much time left at the featherweight weight limit because he has said and his people have said, we're going up in weight. We're going to make the Mariaga fight, maybe one more. If I can't get that unification, I'm going to 130. He's only, you know, he's still growing. You know, he's kind of bursting at the seams at 126. But the reason why the Shakur fight against Warrington can happen is because they would construct it similar to the same manner in which they did the Lomachenko-Luke Campbell fight together, which took place in the UK, which is Shakur has already said he'd be willing to go there. So they would handle in that sense, which means it would be a Sky box office pay-per-view in the UK, and that would give the American rights to ESPN or ESPN Plus. And so they would do it in the late afternoon here in the States on the ESPN platform, and it'll be a pay-per-view in the UK. And I also think, because Eddie Hearn is, I think, has a better bankroll, he can more able to afford the dollar figure that Shakur Stevenson wants for that fight, which makes it even more likely that it will happen.
Now, I was going to say, but before I let you go, Gary Russell, who picked up a win this past weekend, how does he fit into this mix? Does he fit into this mix at all? What does he do next?
Who did you mention?
Gary Russell. How does he fit into this mix?
Gary Russell, you know, is an interesting figure because he's an extremely talented fighter. We saw he scored a nice win against King Tug in the mandatory fight that took place last week. Everybody looks at Gary Russell as a great talent and a worthy competitor against any of these guys, but he has said that he can't get the big fight. Now, if you can't get the big fight, you take the next biggest one you can get and go out there and make seven figures every time you get in the ring. For whatever Gary's reasons are, he has decided not to do that. He wants to fight Leo Santa Cruz. If Santa Cruz is fighting Gervonta Davis, obviously that is not going to be there for him. If you look down the list of guys at 126 or even at 130, you know, for him that are makeable, that are going to be interesting to the public, there's not a lot there. He says he'd go up to 135 if necessary. If there's no Leo Santa Cruz fight against Tank Davis, I tell you, a huge fight that at least in the part of the country where I live, in the, you know, the Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, is Tank Davis against Gary Russell. I mean, one guy's from Washington, one guy's from Baltimore. They'd fill up, you know, any of the arenas in either city. But again, that's probably a long shot. So Gary Russell, he's kind of like a man without a country right now. He's got talent. He's got a title. He can really fight. And he just doesn't have a top guy to fight against, unfortunately. So he's kind of off to the side. And, you know, he's only been fighting once a year. I would hope he would be able to find another fight before the end of this year. If he does, I just really couldn't tell you who it's going to be against or what kind of level it's going to be.
Yeah, I hope so, too. 126 or 130, Gary Russell, I think, would be a threat at either spot. He's just really talented. Dan, always appreciate your time, man. We will see you in Las Vegas, Fury Wilder on the 22nd, man. Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it also, Chris. I look forward to seeing you out there also.